Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me as always from the beautiful picturesque city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Mr. Montoya, good Monday.
Good Monday to you, man. We got a ton to cover of a whole new face of boxing, which, you know, I don't know, man. This is one of those facelifts that you can see it, and I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. Looking forward to it, man. How are you doing on this Monday?
Good. We have a full show. Let's get right into this. 90 minutes, as always. If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. Those digits, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question or a comment via Twitter, you can do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. But let's get started with round number one. It was the much-ballyhooed premiere of the PBC on NBC from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Your co-main events, Keith Thurman with a clear 12-round decision over Robert Guerrero, and then Adrian Broner in a 12-round snoozer over John Molina. Gabe, let's talk about the actual fights first. I picked Guerrero last week in the upset special, and quite frankly, there was a fly in the soup, and I got salmonella. I got food poisoning. I should be flogged. I knew Guerrero's feet were slow, and I knew Thurman could really hit on the fly very well. I thought he could make it a dogfight, and quite frankly, that didn't happen until it was way too late. What does this particular victory say about one-time Thurman?
I thought it was the right kind of fight for him. You know, he's in there. You know, he's at a crucial point where they're kind of finally smoothing over the last edges as he's heading towards, I guess, PBC championship level. Or, you know, we'll get to that later, what exactly championship level is in that league. But I thought it was a good fight for him. He's fighting a guy that is going to hit him strong, hit him hard, but not hit him with anything that's going to knock him out. He's going to be an experienced guy that knows how to meet out his energy over the long haul, and it was going to put pressure. But Robert Guerrero, to me, you know, is all those things, workmanlike, the kind of guy that's going to push you. But what he was also rusty, I thought. He didn't warm up to the back end of the fight, didn't show any urgency till the fight was almost over. And I couldn't help but wonder if he'd been a little more active, if we'd have seen him push one time a little bit more. But that said, I loved the questions that were asked of Thurman. That giant hematoma on his head was something he had to overcome, and I thought he did it. I thought he did it very well.
The last two fights, he's gone 24 rounds. Now, we know Thurman can bang with both hands. We know he's a real puncher, and we know that he can sprint. Now, I think he's gotten some valuable experience. He'll never look like the smoothest technician, but he's very good at being himself. He can hit on the fly. He can hit with both hands. He doesn't always necessarily have to have perfect technique or balance, but he does make it work. As it relates to Robert Guerrero, I think a lot of the technical flaws, quite frankly, I think he needs a real trainer. And at this age and at this stage, it may already be too late. One thing he couldn't do, despite having long limbs, couldn't control distance because he has a bit of a very loose shoelace jab. It's not very forceful. It's not very hard. And he wasn't able to control the distance. And one thing he's never done for a left-handed fighter, Gabe, is actually fight like a southpaw. But Keith Thurman improves a 25-0. The scores for this bout, by the way, 120-107, 118-109, 118-108. And in what they are calling the first main event, as we go to PBC jargon, Adrian Broner improves a 30-1 with a clear-cut 12-round decision over the impotent John Molina. Gabe, I don't know what to really say. He dominated this fight, but I didn't think John Molina had much of what I call a legitimate puncher's chance. I mean, he came in with two losses in a row, and in his last eight bouts now, he's 3-5. And I just got the sense that what we saw against Lucas Matisse was the last vestige of a dangerous John Molina. And I know a lot of people are giving Adrian Broner heat for being always boring in this fight, but I don't think John Molina did his part to really make this fight what some hope that it would be.
I would agree with that, but you know, John just looked like a deer in the headlights or something. He looked, his legs looked a bit like jelly at times. He would throw punches and just not quite seem to have himself under, you know, his legs underneath him. There was some windmill punches that just looked downright amateurish, and it took him such a long time to get into the fight, and then when he even was sort of kind of in the fight in terms of just looking like he was warmed up, he just was tentative. He was fighting exactly the wrong fight. Joe Goosen said coming in that Maidana was successful because he was aggressive and he threw a lot of punches. Molina came into this fight knowing that's what he needed to do. And instead he was like waiting for the perfect shot, and he landed some rights here and there. For a one-handed fighter, he landed way too many rights. But beyond that, there was no plan. There was no there was no passion. But at the same time, I looked at this fight more about what John Molina wasn't doing. I was not that impressed with Adrian Broner. I thought he needed to go in and take care of a guy like John Molina, who's tailor-made for him. He throws wide, slow punches. He only throws, you know, a very small variety of punches, if any. Why didn't Adrian Broner go dominate him? I didn't understand.
You know why? Because I think in the late stages of that fight, he did something that the late, great, dearly departed Dean Smith would have appreciated. He went into his version of the four corners, because he didn't want to become Mickey Bay Part 2. And as for Molina, I said this early in the fight, he was thinking way too much and not punching enough. And a guy like Molina, we know what he is. He's a wild, rugged brawler. I don't think he's ever thrown what I'd call a classic straight right cross. He is what he is, and on this night, he simply wasn't. Now, Gabe, what did you think of the overall presentation and the packaging of the PBC first time out?
It feels a little bit like it's a strange mishmash of trying to be nostalgic, bringing in Al Michaels and Marv Albert, who I'm sorry, when you're wearing a toupee that bad and it's a little bit messed up and you're kind of blowing your lines to start the show. I mean, he looked like a scared old, confused old man at times. He warmed in during the show, but it didn't do anything for me. It was weird. It was trying to strike a chord, and yet here was a show that really struck a chord with 18 to 34 year olds. That was the demographic. None of these people care about Al Michaels or Marv Albert. The ring walks, I felt, were very strange. They were trying to do the European thing where you see the guy on the stage and everything, but he didn't have his entourage with him, and the music, I could give a damn about Hans Zimmer's music outside of a movie. It seemed a little homogenized, a little strange. But that said, it's also a first show, and I think, you know, while there's marketing people that are putting this together, it feels like, as opposed to boxing people, there's some things missing, you know, like the crowd noise. It seems like it's really far away, and it felt like that on the Friday show as well as the Saturday show. And so you didn't really get the sense that you did in that Fight Night Club that the Golden Boy did, where there was just, like, energy. You could see it coming through the screen. The fights were okay, you know, but I don't think anything rises and falls off this first show. Less B.J. Flores and Leila Ali. It was just kind of weird to me. It was homogenized. I think that was the main thing, passionless.
Gabe, two words come to mind, and they've been used by a lot of people, sanitize and antiseptic. And I think they tried to fix things that weren't broke. I never thought having a really good ring announcer was one of the problems with boxing. I like the flag wavers and the hype men. I don't even mind the Watson boys because they create an anger and emotion where you start getting invested into having those guys lose a fight. Are we no longer going to get national anthems for like big Mexican fights, which is, I thought, one of the great moments in boxing, which builds the anticipation. Also, as it relates to Hans Zimmer, does that mean every single fighter, regardless of identity or personality, has to come out to that? Could you imagine telling Mike Tyson, hey, Mike, ditch the public enemy and don't believe the hype, or welcome to the Terror Dome? You're coming out to this symphony. Something about that just strikes me wrong. Also, as a guy, no ring card girls, the ring announcer is actually not in the ring. I don't know. To me, it felt very prepackaged, and a lot of people compared this to American Gladiator, American Idol, and The Contender, and those were used as pejoratives. And I got this email, which I thought was very interesting, from a guy, Mike Bolanski, who actually works in the television business, and this is just part of his email. He said, overall, the PBC was like being invited to bang a super hot model and then learning she has AIDS. It looks and sounds good at first, but the reality is it's a nightmare. Ouch.
Nice. That's a little extreme, but, you know, it's the television industry. I felt it was a lot like Ray Leonard's commentary, which I tweeted. It was not all good. It was not all bad. Hopefully it'll improve. You know, I do have to say that I am very impressed with John Molina Jr.'s ability to stay in there with Adrian Broner. I mean, how many times did we hear Ray Leonard say that?
Granted,
you know, I've done ringside. You've done ringside. You've done it way more than I have. I did it one time. It's not an easy job, and it's hard to get comfortable with calling the action and actually being comfortable with silence, not saying something. But that was a little brutal.
Yeah.
A little brutal.
Dave, that was sugar repetitive Leonard there, no doubt about it. And in terms of the announcers, I don't need to cast the thousands. It's basically two guys in a ring with the referee. And I think it was unfair for every announcer, especially Marv Albert, who hasn't done this in at least 25, 30 years, to settle into a groove when you're not just being blow by blow, you're being a traffic cop. But again, this is the first time out. The ratings were pretty solid. I'll let the experts decide how solid or how good the numbers are. Hopefully this will evolve, but again, I just feel that this is now the makings of a league. Now, one of the issues that people aren't allowed to show their belts. Well, here's the hypocrisy in that. These guys are being billed as champions based on these same belts that you're trying to expunge. Now, someone's trying to explain to me or made the argument, well, Steve, don't you like belts? So how come you don't like the PBC? Something that asinine, I don't even know where to start, but do people understand the PBC belt will in essence only be allowed to be won or contested for by guys under Al Heyman's banner? If you can't see the difference between that and the WBC, WBA, WBO, and IBF, you're too far gone to be helped. Gabe, as it relates to April 11th, I do think this is important, though. When the Guerrero-Thurman fight heated up, the crowd was engaged, and it goes to show you that no matter what the bells and whistles are and whatever technology you put in, without an engaged crowd, it really doesn't matter. You can't have one without the other. And looking ahead to the next PBC card on NBC, I do think on paper that show with Peterson Garcia and Quillen Lee, I think, is far superior than what we saw coming into this last weekend.
Yeah, and I think if they learn from some of the things and kind of do, you know, it's, I don't think Al Heyman's going to listen to anybody in boxing, but those little things that they could fix, you know, put back the ring announcer. Jeez, throw us some ring card girls. You know, maybe they're waiting for – I mean, they did have Corona advertising, so I was surprised they didn't have that. But, you know, I'm not – you know, that doesn't rise and fall with me, the ring card girls. I love a good ring card girl, but I'm married now, so but I don't really care. But the ring walks – all that stuff is a little funky. And one thing I wanted to point out, like, they did send out this press release about they had more than – they were rolling out their stats. You know, the viewership peaked at 4.2 million for the final rounds of Thurman Guerrero, which was not fight of the year, folks. It was a pretty good fight, had a nice ending, not fight of the year. But they threw this other one out. More than 575,000 minutes live streamed via NBC Sports Live Extra. Now – I was watching the fight on my laptop because I knew I was going to be leaving. I was going to a concert, to a show. So I watched the first fight on my laptop through this NBC Sports link. I wanted to see how it works. And then I watched Guerrero Thurman on my phone, which actually their mobile app is great. The stream's really great on the iPhone. But both of those apps only give you 45 minutes free access to this app. And then you got to sign up, put all your information in, and the only way you can get through is if you have a cable provider. They have a wide list of choices because you have to name it and then you get in. So I just did the math, and that's about 12,778,000 people. Or 45-minute little increments that they gave out. That's what that measurement is, in my opinion. So
moving,
these things are you know, how it all shapes up.
It'll be interesting. You mentioned Corona. That seems to be the only national ad. I saw a lot of Floyd Mayweather ads, and I guess he's fighting somebody May 2nd, Gabe. They never mentioned the other guy's name, but I'll be sure to tune in. I'm sure it'll be a pretty good fight. And you know what? I might even buy tickets because I'm sure they'll be readily available if they're not naming the opponent. There are a lot of PBC commercials, and from some of the people that I talked to that are much more well-versed in this, there's a lot of local buyback ads. So it'll be interesting to see on April 11th, based on these numbers, do they add sponsors besides Corona? Okay, moving on, round number two. We'll just talk about the main event here on HBO. Bell Center in Montreal for the WBA, IBF, and WBO light heavyweight title. Sergey Kovalev, one of the hottest fighters in the world at 26-0-1, 23 stoppages, takes on the grizzled Jean Pascal with the record of 29-2-1. Gabe, is Jean Pascal being a little bit underrated here? I mean, think about his strength of schedule. Fought Bernard Hopkins twice. He fought Carl Froch. He fought Chad Dawson, and he beat Lucien Boutte. He's athletic. He's got a lot of confidence, and he's got the home canvas advantage. Is he being short-shrifted here?
I think so, a little bit. I think it's a much tighter fight than people realize. I mean, he's also got a new team. You know, he's got Memo Heredia with him. He's had him for a few fights. And those kind of relationships take a few fights to gel. I think Heredia and Marquez didn't gel until, the fourth Pacquiao fight. Now, I think that was their third fight together. So that's kind of a storyline here, and I think that Sergey has jumped up in class pretty high, but he jumped up to a guy that was 49 years old that looked a little bit more than like his age than we had remembered or that we'd ever really seen. Now he's fighting a guy that feels like he's kind of reborn, feels super strong with this new trainer, is athletic, he's awkward, he does have power, and what's worse is that he's a power puncher that throws awkward punches that land in awkward places on your head. So I think Kovalev is vulnerable in this fight, but I also think that he brings the best possible weapon for a matchup like this, straight power punches right down the middle and from an odd angle. I'm really liking this fight.
The most fundamental punch in boxing that really corralled and controlled Bernard Hopkins and all his guile, the jab. And I do believe that he's going to have to work his way to control this guy from the outside, use that lasso with the left hand, and eventually close in. I see this fight going rounds, but I'm going to stick with the chalk. I will go with Sergey Kovalev. How about you, Gabe?
I'm going big. I'm going Sergey Kovalev by knockout in about 8 rounds, I want to say.
Hmm.
I think he just – that jab is going to soften him up. I think he wants to make a statement. And I think that Pascal is going to be aggressive, but he tends to fade a little bit. He starts strong, he gets a little tired, and with that, his structure kind of breaks down. His punching frame gets a little funky. And I think Kovalev, we haven't seen the best of him yet. I think we get to see a little bit more of his game, and I think he takes out Pascal, who's has been known to get hurt.
Two other fights on this HBO broadcast, heavyweight showdown. Steve Cunningham takes on Slava Glaskov, and then light heavyweights in action. Vasily Lepikin takes on Isaac Chalemba. If you want to talk about that, go ahead, give us a call at 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. And speaking of Twitter, let's go to Gaddy Fan. How does Al and NBC expect casual fans to continue to tune in when they've been trained for years that only big fights are on pay-per-view? Well, Gabe, that's part of the plan, is to bring the better fights back to the masses.
Right. I think, that's why, like Nicole Duva is very, very vocal out there, a critic of all this stuff. And I just think right now, it's sort of like when Showtime did their deal with Floyd. It's a little too early to feel one way or the other. Like, we're seeing their product. They're also new at this, they're being the lead and putting it out. These are new people producing this product. So we need to see the bugs get out a little bit and see where it all goes. I don't think it needs to be condemned or praised yet. It's just kind of is what it is. I mean, the fights are going to get better. And after 6 months, we're going to see where we're at. I mean, this is the thing that I wonder. It all leads up to this mysterious pay-per-view, against a mysterious opponent that Floyd's fighting, Pacquiao. So they're marketing in this way that the top of the PBC mountain is Floyd. It has nothing to do with anything outside the universe. Pacquiao doesn't really exist. So I do wonder, are they going to funnel it like the old model, like always to a pay-per-view, or is the goal to just kind of saturate the market and get used to, you know, everybody watching primetime boxing, and the hope is that the network starts paying for it. That's what I wonder.
That is the $500 million gamble of one Al Haymon. Here's one from Professor Brian Battaglia. I speak for most. Add a ring announcer, normal ring walks, fire Zimmer and much less BJ and Layla, and we have a start. His grade, D-plus overall. Very tough curve there. And here's one from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. Where do you guys think this idea of hitting the reset button on the sport came from? Just a requirement of a new league? Interesting question, Gabe. Why do they want to completely expunge a lot of the traditions of the sport? I find that interesting. I mean, not only are they going to have their own sanctioning body, in my opinion, with the Garcia-Peterson fight, it even seems like they might be making up their own weight classes.
Right. Well, I think I wouldn't call boxing broke, but, I mean, look at this is my problem, and I wouldn't put main events in this category, but certainly Top Rank. What have they actually done for the sport? They've had a lot of big events. They've had a lot of big fights, and the traditional model of building up one guy as your brand, and then maybe they build up the opponent, and they have this big fight, or another guy kind of emerges, and they have this big fight. But boxing always kind of goes back to square one, and then we build back towards another fight. And as we moved away from network TV and major cities and moved more and more to Vegas and the casinos and the cable, you know, pay TV and pay-per-view, the sport became niche. That's under the old guard. So, you know, I think the whole point of doing this new league and throwing a lot of things out, I mean, four sanctioning bodies, I mean, we could have a long debate about whether they're good or bad. They've made good fights. They've helped careers and guys, you know, have different avenues to the top. But have they grown the sport? We're now a niche sport where we used to be the sport.
Gabe,
in
other markets across the world, it's grown. It's only the paradigm where we're on pay-per-view and premium cable, which is the United States, it has shrunk. But across the world, they're not bitching about the WBO or the IBF. They develop stars, and they support them, and they don't have casinos. So that paradigm doesn't exist. And I will give Haymon credit for this. This paradigm needed to be shaken up a long time ago. He's got people's attention, and I respect the fact, and I really like it. It's not business as usual. Everyone is on guard now, and I believe other companies that are the rivals of the PBC will be announcing their own media platforms and a new way of doing business. And quite frankly, this probably needed to be done at least a decade ago. Here's a tweet from Boxing Fanatic. Definitely wasn't crazy about the solo ring walk. Looked a bit awkward. Reminded me of WWE and not boxing. Gabe, I found it ironic that the video board and the entrance ramp, which was supposed to enhance the in-arena experience, actually sterilized it. And I've made this point before. Whether it's Prince Nassim Ahmed, who had some of the most elaborate choreographed entrances, or Mike Tyson, which was just a simple terry cloth and Public Enemy blaring, or Stevie Johnston playing Love TKO, you need that personality. And to fit everyone into a cookie cutter, again, as Andrew V. Kennedy says, it's about the brand. And I'm not so sure that's a good thing.
Right. Well, that's the UFC. You know, it's about the brand. It's not about any one fighter. And that's I always hear this argument, too, that, you know, people that declare boxing dead. Well, after such and such, after De La Hoya or after Tyson, who's the next pay-per-view guy? And maybe Al's trying to circumvent that. Because remember, like, I think it's a very valid point you brought up. And, you know, here we have Al going to China, or Bob Arum going to China, opening up that market. The European market has grown. I mean, the Klitschkos have done very well over there, being the world heavyweight champion, but fighting out of, you know, Germany. The UK market's great. Over here, though, we've died on the vine. I mean, we just came out of the Olympics with no medals whatsoever, and no real sign that USA Boxing's got its act together to fix that. And the North American market has become very niche. I think that's what Al's concentrating on. So I just wonder, how long can he insist on this move? Is it 2 years? How long?
I've been told it's a 4-year investment, and he has somewhere in the hundreds and hundreds of millions. So that's a very deep war chest. Here's our last tweet before we get to the calls. Is San Francisco going to be okay talking about the Niners? Also, number two, how bad does Godinello, K.O. Kirkland, this is from Godinello's Ellerby, I hate to tell you, San Francisco is absolutely toast. They are now at the Dennis Erickson stage of their franchise. And, Gabe, right now with Canelo and Kirkland, I'm sticking with my prediction. No Ann Wolf, no real chance for Mandingo.
No chance whatsoever. For one, about the Niners, I couldn't be happier. I'm a Rams fan. yeah, I was born and they handed me my jersey. But for Canelo Kirkland, I remember when he deleted into the Tapia fight, and I was back east, and I ran into Kathy Duva, who used to have Kirkland. Their company had Kirkland early on before he went to jail the first time. And she said, man, you know, she kind of felt bad because she knew that Tapia's people were happy to get Kirkland when he wasn't with Ann Wolf, but being with Ann Wolf makes all the difference. And while I've heard people say, one writer in particular, give these new guys a chance in Kirkland's corner, you know, they got to start somewhere. In the fight of your life, that's not really the place to be. And I just don't see any chance of James winning this fight, whether his weight is good or his shape is good or not, without Ann Wolf. It's just not going to happen.
All right, let's get to the phone lines. The number, 347-215-7598. Later on, we'll preview the Spike PBC show, which takes place in Ontario, California. And we have news and notes. Gabe, let's line them up.
In the 503, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. It's Tyler from Oregon. I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts were on Gary Russell versus Johnny Gonzalez. And I also read that if Johnny Gonzalez gets past Gary Russell Jr., that in the summer he would fight Abner Mars, and if he gets past Abner Mars, he would get Leo Santa Cruz. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, well, let's go one fight at a time. I think that's a tough fight to call. I do think the quickness of Gary Russell will be a factor. And remember this, Gary Russell is the Al Haymon fighter. Also, I believe that Abner Morris, who absolutely, I thought, stunk out the joint in many ways as the walkout bout on NBC Sports Network, they're saying that he's going to fight Leo Santa Cruz. So, you know, let's see what happens March 28th before we start mapping out the rest of Johnny Gonzalez's career.
Yeah, I tend to lean towards Johnny. I like the experience. I like that he brings it in big fights. He's been staying busy. Gary's going to show something, some substance at the world class level. I didn't see that other than the ability to kind of last rounds with Lomachenko, but I didn't see the substance. I didn't see him bite down, dig in, and say, okay, I got to change things and win this by fighting. Maybe he takes advantage of Gonzalez's chin. But I lean towards Gonzalez in this fight. Just a gut feeling.
Well, what are you guys' favorite upsets that no one really talks about?
What was that again?
What are you guys' favorite upsets that doesn't really get talked about too much?
You know, I remember long ago when I first got into this business, one of the first upset specials that I called was Junior Jones against Marco Antonio Barrera. Now, Barrera was a fight or two from that legendary war that kicked off Boxing After Dark against Kennedy and McKinney, and people were fitting him as the heir apparent to Julio Cesar Chavez, and they thought he was unstoppable. But I just had this feeling that Junior Jones, tall, lanky puncher, very athletic, who had been knocked out a few times, had that proverbial puncher's chance, and guess what? I got lucky, and I called Junior Jones to win that fight, which he did twice, by the way.
I think for me, one of my favorite upsets, maybe people do talk about it, but it was my birthday, and a few days before, and I'd made a bunch of bets in like five in a row before I was a boxing writer, and did a parlay. Bunch of fights, some were going with the chalk, but like two or three of them were going against it, and the cherry on top was O'Neill Bell versus Jean-Marc Mormack, and he won in the 10th round, and that was the capper. I made a grip of money off of that fight, so that's probably one of my first personal favorite upset specials.
All right, listen, we got to get running, okay? We got so many calls here. Thank you for joining us. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and give us your thoughts. What did you think about the premiere of the PBC, Gabe?
646, you're live on the next round. 646.
Yes. How are y'all doing? It's Baye the God. Listen, I thought that the production was horrible. I thought that Marv Albert was not at his best. I remember Marv Albert back from the 1980s. I think that Layla Ali and BJ really didn't serve a purpose. I think that the guy who was supposed to give analysis on the scores was not allowed to do it. Sugar Ray Leonard, he just wasn't in place. Now, as far as the premise of what they're trying to do, if the ratings are true, it's going to be a great thing for boxing, because if you're having fights like Thurman and Guerrero, I mean, man, that's going to turn a lot of people on. That's within the demographics of 24 to 52 or something like that. So I think they're definitely on point as far as that go. Now, is Al Hyman the type of person that will look at some of the things that people like you, Steve, have wrote, the guy that writes for Yahoo, Kevin, and Dan, and some of the others, in their critique of the production and make the necessary changes, like you said earlier, that may happen on the 11th. But as far as the fights were, I thought they were pretty good. Barna, I mean, he's not really a good fighter. And in order for him to be seen as the star that he proclaims himself to be, he's going to have to be in a fight like Madonna gave him with someone else, a war. Now, it's nice to see that he's coming back in June. And have you heard, Steve, who he may be fighting? That's
no. And by the way, that's going to be June 20th in Cincinnati. And I actually think he's become a draw in Cincinnati.
Right.
And I believe there'll be a lot more electricity and atmosphere that night than there was for the Molina fight. And Molina, you know, listen, he was what he was. He was chosen for a reason. I do believe Broner now, listen, after the Maidana fight, they have rehabilitated him with some pretty soft, easy, safe fights in certain ways. It'll be interesting to see the matchmaking process moving forward to June 20th.
Yeah, but you can't have Molina on that showcase as the fighter that he should have fought for the first time. To me, I think the perfect fight was Thurman and Guerrero. That gave boxing fans what we've been desperately looking for. And if you notice, the ratings increased as time went on. So it was your friends making calls to their friends saying, oh, man, we got a good one on Channel 4. You know what I mean? They're fighting. And that's what you want. You want people to call up their boys and say, yo, turn on Channel 4. You know what I'm saying? NBC, because that's what the deal is. But
I just don't think it could get, stylistically, I don't think it could have gotten any better for Adrian Broner than John Molina for this fight. I thought he was put there to be knocked out, taken out in spectacular fashion. I mean, slow, wide punches, and Broner didn't really meet the moment.
Broner doesn't have that skill. He doesn't have the – see, people think he has the skill to knock people out, but he really doesn't. If you look at his knockouts, he's never been a knockout puncher or someone who has the ability to really do his thing. But I'll leave you with this. As far as this fight that you was talking about with the light heavyweights coming up, Pascal doesn't have a chance, just like Kirkland doesn't have a chance without Ann in his corner. And Steve, keep up the good work, man. I just enjoy your show, man.
All right.
Have a good night. Take care.
Bye, thank you very much. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
In the 3-2-3, you're live on the next round. 3-2-3.
Fight on, gentlemen. Fight on.
Oh, fight on.
What's
up? What can we do for
What's
you?
What's going on? You know, just called in to give my my arrogant two cents on the PBC on NBC. I have to go with an incomplete grade, Stephen Gabe. I didn't like the WWE walkouts. Don't get me started on Hans Zimmer. Steve, I did miss the Watson twins because I got nobody to curse at.
Right.
To lead up to the fight, and it pissed me off. They should have a Watson brother on each side.
Sanch, you know what it's like, and I compared this, like in college sports, it's about rivalries, and if there's a school that you hate, and for me it's Notre Dame based on the 80s with Catholics versus convicts, I hated, and I still hate, the Notre Dame Leprechaun, as I'm sure you do also as a student of USC.
Yes. Yes.
But that's part of the flavor and fun of the sport. But I do believe the reason why they're keeping the Watsons out of the ring is that they don't want to give the perception of favoring one fighter over the other. I think that's the issue there.
Well, you put two Watsons in one corner and you put Daddy Watson in the other. I mean, what's the problem?
The Civil War.
Yeah, and Steve, I was so upset when I heard Damas y Caballeros. That is Michael Buffer's line. You do not use that line unless there's Mexicans fighting in the next Mexican national anthem. And the first fight was a snooze fest. The Thurman-Guerrero fight didn't pick up until after round six, and it became a good scrap after that. But I got to give it an incomplete because we got to see what happens after these April fights and see what kind of matchups Al Haymon gives us after Danny Garcia and Ramon Peterson and Stevenson and Chavez Jr., and Lee and Quillen. That's why I can't give it a real good grade. I thought Marv Albert did his best. I thought Sugar Ray Leonard disappointed me when he called Adrian Broner a great fighter. I don't know what the hell was going on right there. And I'm glad boxing was on network TV. I appreciate that. But as far as getting excited, there was nothing to get excited about, really. It was an okay scrap that's not going to be a fight of the year candidate, and Abdermar has stunk out the joint as always. He still can't find his chin after Gonzalez took care of him, and it's to be expected. I want to see what happens going forward.
Gabe, we've said this from the beginning, and the one word I've harped on is sustainability, and the first round of PBC fights are very solid. I want to see what happens in the second generation of fights and the third generation of fights is what are the ramifications of Keith Thurman winning? Will he eventually fight an Errol Spence? Will a Peter Quillen eventually fight a Danny Jacobs? And what did we say about the broadcast this past weekend, guys? When the fights got good, that's when the telecast got good. So regardless of anything else, whether it's the marketing, the platform, the bells and whistles, it is about the fights.
No question. It has to have substance. It has to lead somewhere. And I think that's part of why the belts have gone away in their universe. And it was interesting that, you know, the Thurmans people weren't allowed to raise his belt. But as somebody pointed out, that wasn't a PBC employee. That was a Nevada State Athletic Commission employee.
Yes.
Making him not lift his belt. What's that about? I think that's a little interesting. There's definitely a story there. And I think, too, you know, in just looking, you know, at this, as they're kind of creating this universe, I think the media, more than ever, is important here. Radio Raheem did an interview, you know, I think he's more freelance. I think he does Max Boxing, and he wrote something on Boxing Scene recently. He interviewed Richard Schaefer, and I think it's interesting, you know, there was sort of Richard was hanging around. People were talking to him, but nobody was interviewing him. And if you listen to that interview, he says, I'm just here as a fan. And then later he says he's an advisor to Al Haymon. And later, further in the interview, says he's an advisor to the fighters. I heard a rumor that Richard will be taking over in short order here over at the PBC or working at the PBC openly. What gives?
Gabe,
people need to ask those questions.
Gabe, there's a line from LL Cool J as it relates to Richard Schaefer. Don't call it a comeback. Because he never left. That's the reality.
I had another thing, guys. Like, yeah, we can expect all that to happen. But like you said, it's the sustainability. Where are the fights going to be after that? And going forward, I would like to see Thurman fight Khan. I would like to see Broner step it up a notch and fight someone of an elite caliber. But as far as the fight this Saturday, you know, I have Kovalev. I think Pascal will make it interesting for a couple rounds, but then I have Kovalev taking over and dominating. I'm going with the chalk. And Steve, where in the world is Andre Ward? I know we're enjoying our 2015 with no Andre Ward sighting within the foreseeable future. So everything's good. Boxing got a stellar lineup for May, and any word on who Triple G might be fighting?
I believe that Turiano Johnson is in the running, and it will be May 16th, and I believe it will be, I don't want to give it away, but let's just put it this way. Magic Johnson and Wayne Gretzky used to play there, but I'm not giving out any hints.
Oh, we'll be there. The Zima's going to be on ice. Ceviche in the parking lot, baby.
All right, Fedge, fight on. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We are here for a full 90 minutes, all the way till 9:30 Eastern time. Gabe, who's next?
860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, CT?
What's up, CT?
Welcome aboard. So, CT, what did you make of the PBC presentation?
I'll be honest. I was just, you know, sitting there trying to enjoy everything that, you know, they were trying to give. I'm looking forward to the fights. I mean, what they were doing is pretty new to me. I mean, something that I don't see on HBO and Showtime. I don't know. I kind of like the whole thing myself. Not too negative about it.
Okay. And what else is on your mind, CT?
As for the fights, I just think Molina fought the wrong fight. I just think he was looking for that one shot. And I think it got to him psychologically. Once you hit Broner with that overhand right, I think it was in the third or fourth round. Once he saw he couldn't hurt Broner, I pretty much thought the fight was over. And Broner did what he had to do. He got in close, and he let his hands go. I think he got off first, and that was the main point of him winning that fight. He fought smart, and I give him full credit for it. I think, like I said, it's that Molina fought the wrong fight. As for Thurman, he definitely surprised me. I didn't actually think he was going to come out that aggressive. Like, you know, usually see fighters say they're going to do something, and they don't do it. He definitely did. And he actually, to me, I think I might be wrong about this, but he was the first fighter that I've seen with that human form of a lump on his head go through the whole fight with it. And he also scored a knockdown with it. So mentally, he was definitely prepared for that fight. He didn't let anything stop him. Actually, I wasn't sure if Guerrero was going to get up the way he fell like that. But Guerrero showed heart. He actually caught Thurman with some good shots with some good right check hooks in the beginning. It was an overall good fight, great performance, and I would like to see who Thurman fights next. He always surprised me, you know, with his fights. He always shows me something new, and he's definitely a rising welterweight.
Gabe, CT, here's my opinion on what has happened to John Molina. I think that he got chipped away at so badly and banged up for the first time, where he really got hurt over a sustained period of time against the machine, Lucas Matisse. If you look at these previous or these subsequent two fights against Humberto Soto and Adrian Broner, while he still throws wild, powerful punches, he's no longer quite as willing to stick his nose in the pile and get in there. I do think he's a little bit gun-shy after last April.
I was surprised that he didn't try to go manhandle Broner. You know, he kept saying he's going to knock him out, but, I mean, John's not a – I don't think of him as a pinpoint puncher. I think of him as a grinder that occasionally will batter you with the big shot after kind of breaking you down a bit or manhandling you, getting you out of your comfort zone. He never did that, and that's exactly what Joe said not to do. You know, Thurman, though, I think he's got a lot to work on. I mean, he's awkward and it works for him, but there are things he still does that – to me, it need to be fixed. I mean, the way he lets his hands drift away from his face when he's punching with either side, I think that's going to come back to haunt him at some point, particularly late in the fight where he's getting tired and maybe not as quick moving his head as he was in the first half of the fight. But he just shows more depth. I mean, what he dealt with that hematoma, a lot of guys would fold the tent, and he just found a different way to win. And, I mean, that couldn't have been easy, man. That thing was horrible and gigantic. Put him in the hospital, and he found a way to win. So I tend to think that he's got championship stuff. But like Steve said, the question is, are they going to funnel him that way? Are they going to develop him that way?
Mm-hmm. CT, we got to get running, okay?
Okay, can I just pick one winner on this weekend's fight?
Yeah.
I'm picking Kovalov, but I think it's going to be more competitive than what people think.
You are on the record and the DVD. Thank you for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
585. You're live on the next round. 585.
Hey, guys. It's Jake from State Farm.
Jake from State Farm. How are the khakis? All pressed and pleated and everything?
Their pizza stand and they have bong resin all over
the stuff. So, Jake, what's on your mind?
I was wondering if you guys had any information on the weights that the PBC is going to use, because it seems like they're not, in general, they're not really recognizing standards, you know, that are recognized by the entire boxing industry. I mean, from what you guys are saying, to the ring announcer, to the walk-ins, to the weights, and not recognizing world title belts. I mean, have they said anything regarding weight classes or anything like that?
No. Here's what I found interesting, Jake, about Adrian Broner supposedly not making weight but making weight. They say, well, since it's a non-title fight, the contract said 140 plus one. Okay, I've heard that term a lot, the plus one. That happens in a lot of bouts on every fight card. Then you get to the fight, and it's a 12-rounder. Gabe, how many non-title fights are 12 rounds nowadays, if ever?
Yeah, I mean, do they throw the, because I've heard this term, the 12-round special attraction? Do they throw that
okay.
on top of it?
Yeah.
You know, because I've heard that. So, but yeah, it's just strange. I mean, they're operating in their own universe, and I don't think, even when you go to their website, it's strange. Like, there's, you know, like I was really following it. I wanted to see, you know, kind of out of necessity, but also just figure I'd cover this. Looking at the mobile app, looking at them online, you know, through the browser, and they're kind of updating things live. They've got stories, like they're their own media. They're, you know, like the UFC does this. They own several media outlets, and they just kind of put out, and the UFC.com, they're their own place for news about their league. And I think that's exactly what the PBC is doing. I don't think anybody should be surprised anymore. When you're not going to see a WBA belt or any of these interim, any, you know, BF belts, nobody's going to get to dip their beak anymore. I think they're cutting those guys completely out. But I'm curious, Steve, you know, just in this vein, these salaries, what do you think about them? I mean, they're kind of professional league salaries. I mean, they are getting hit in the head, and this is a very dangerous, life-altering sport. But is that, again, is that sustainable? I mean, and do you think everybody should raise up to them or meet them in the middle in terms of these salaries?
I've said from the beginning regarding Al Haymon as an advisor, his job is to get the most amount of reward for as little risk as possible. Now the dynamic has changed because he's also the promoter, basically. Let's face it, these guys like Lou DiBella, Leon Margulies, and Yvonne Michel, they're basically glorified site coordinators. I mean, that's just the reality. These guys are getting paid extremely well, which is why I've never understood why these fighters are questioned for sticking with Al. I've said this, and I've been consistent. If you're with somebody that allows you to get paid very well for theoretically easier jobs, sign me up for some of that. Okay, now from a fan standpoint, it may not necessarily be the most ideal situation, but fighters have a very short career, finite amount of time to really make money, and they certainly have every right to cash in on what is a very, very short and dangerous career, as you pointed out, Gabe.
Oh, this is interesting. I just got a text during the show from somebody I really trust, a source in the fight industry, that just said simply, the PBC belts are coming. There'll be a BS panel of media that's going to do the rankings just like they do in the UFC, and that's how it's going to begin.
Right, and here's the problem with saying it's like any other belt. Will it include Gennady Golovkin at middleweight? Will it include Sergey Kovalev at light heavyweight? It's interesting that one of the commercials for Deontay Wilder, he calls himself, quote-unquote, a heavyweight champion, which he is. He has a belt. But it was only with that distinction of the WBC. So those very same belts that gave him this distinction of being a quote-unquote champion, now you're going to expunge him. I find that to be somewhat ironic. Jake, anything else?
Can I get your take on a non-boxing question, Steve?
Yes, what's that?
All right. I see you. I know you're a Lakers fan, and I see you.
Don't remind me.
On your Twitter feed. Well, I'm a Spurs fan, a lifelong Spurs fan.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's how I feel. But who do you think the best, in your opinion, no try to sort out the bias, Who do you think is the best player since Michael Jordan? Kobe Bryant or
Tim Duncan? It's very simple. The Spurs have been more consistent, and it's a much better end of the career. I mean, think about it. If Tim Duncan's not taken out of the game 2 years ago, he grabs a rebound. Spurs are working on a three-peat right now. And let's face it, I think many more marquee players would rather play with Tim Duncan than Kobe Bryant. Jake, we got to run, okay?
Thanks.
347-215-7598. That is the number. And, again, if you want to tweet us, at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Here's a tweet from Robert Palmer. Have you heard anything concrete on the rumors of Bundu versus Spence fighting on April 11th? I believe David Greisman wrote a report for Boxing Scene stating as such, and that's about all I've heard, which, you know, it is what it is, and maybe we'll see Bundu Spence on April 11th. Gabe, who's next?
619, you're live on the next round. 619.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Steve, how you doing, Gabe? This is Juan from San Diego.
Juan, welcome
aboard.
What's
up, man?
What's up? I was very excited about the return of boxing to network television, but as it looks, it's not the return of boxing. It's a new sport or a new league or something else, because what I saw last Saturday didn't seem like regular boxing to me. Everything, they threw everything out of the table, no belts, no announcers. In the end, of course, the fight, the Guerrero-Thurman fight, turned out to be quite a good fight. Not the best, like they said it was, but at least in their world, is the best welterweight fight ever. So the thing to me is that what I think that Heyman is trying to do here, he wants to take out the divas in the sport. You know, like Miguel Cotto, just think about what he did last week. He just went to a place where he's going to get a lot of money by fighting nobody. So with the PBC, Heyman has control of the fighters. If you think about the fighters he doesn't have any big names, like real big names, names that people know, not the hardcores, like regular people. Broner, if you see what he said after the fight, just when he started to be Broner, they cut him off. So they just stopped. They stopped him from being himself. And that takes away from it, you know. It takes away from the personalities. I think they're trying to just, as you said, take care of the brand and forget about the divas. And if you think about it, Floyd Mayweather, he's not on the PBC. He's still in the box, in the regular boxing world. They're not even marketing him as the PBC. So I think that they're trying to take away that from the sport and begin with something else. I don't know if that's going to work. If you think about the UFC and you think about the WWF or WWE, the difference between those two leagues is the WWF and WWE had stars. Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage. The UFC doesn't. It has the UFC.
Let me jump in here, though, Gabe. But isn't the point of being on NBC and being in front of so many more eyeballs that you will then create a star based on that vast platform?
Yeah, I think so. I think
Well, like the UFC has had multiple fighters that are kind of stars of the moment in their divisions, and then they fade out, and then another one's created, and the guys fight pretty often. I mean, look at that, how fast Broner's fight. No negotiations, no BS, no back and forth. They just announce his next fight. I've said this for years. It's one of the big problems in boxing is that, you know, like the UFC, when a fight's over, the next opponent sometimes comes right into the ring, or they just say, hey, this guy's now lined up for this shot, and you leave that pay-per-view knowing the road that those fighters are about to take. That never really happens in boxing. It's so rare anymore. With this, I mean, look how fast Broner's got to fight now. I think you're right. I mean, I think he's cut out all the fat of the sport. How that plays out ultimately, we'll see.
And one more thing. I think that if you think about it, I think we can't actually give a grade. This is I think after a year we may give a grade. I think they still need to figure out what they want to do. I don't think they have it figured out. If you see what happened last Saturday, we have Al Michaels, Marv Albert, Sugar Ray Leonard. Those are classics. Then you don't have a ring announcer. You don't have ring card girls. That's not classic. So what are they trying to do? Classic or not classic?
Yeah.
They need to make up their mind, in my book.
Juan, thank you for the call. Gabe, let's go to Twitter. Here's one from YDKSAB, which is an acronym for you don't know shit about boxing. He says, PBC reminds me of the early 90 internet company that spent millions on marketing to drive up stock price up to later sell. Al Heyman is pushing PBC to an IPO. My friend, cashing out is his goal.
Well, I just think it's, you know, I mean, like you said, it's a four-year deal. So that's a long time to insist on a move and to just kind of bend everybody else to your will. If you're willing to sit pretty like that and guys are coming out of the next Olympics going, you know, I want to be in the PBC because it's been doing well, it's doing good ratings, guys are making bank, and it's getting a foothold, that's going to be tough next time, next signing class for all the other guys. I mean, as much as we love Triple G and he's got an HBO contract, he does need people to fight.
Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
All right. 530, you're live on the next round.
Good evening, Steve. Gabe, it's Ringside Robert here.
What's up, man?
The PBC, they have a lot of work to do, but as a boxing fan, I'm going to give it a chance and see what they do. I agree with everything you've said as far as the music, no ring card girls, no ring announcer. You know, I agree with all that. But I like boxing on my TV, and it's free. And as long as they give me decent fights, I'm willing to give it a chance. As far as this weekend's fight, I think Kovalev will take it with no problem. Yes, Pascal has changed his team, and he's probably made some improvements, but Sergey showed me a lot when he beat Hopkins, and I think he's going to be able to handle Kovalev, and I hope one day we get the Stevenson fight. That's the one I want to see him in.
Robbie?
Yeah?
Over Al Heyman's cold, dead PBC belt and body.
Steve, I know that, but you know, that's the fight I want to see him in. You know, whether it happens or not, hopefully it doesn't turn into another six-year Mayweather-Pacquiao thing where everybody had to wait 6 years before that got made. So, and you know, that's one thing I'd like to see change in boxing. If Al Heyman is going to change anything, I would like him to be able to change the negotiating tactics that go on with some of these promoters and force people to actually sit down at tables and actually do business. And you know, because you know, having a fight like Mayweather-Pacquiao take place 5 years too late, you know, that's not good for a sport like boxing. And Miguel Cotto signing with a guy like Jay-Z, just so you really so you don't have to fight a guy like Triple G, to me that's kind of classless. If anything needs to change in boxing, I'm hoping that somebody will come along and change the negotiating tactic of some of these people and actually make fights happen instead of going through some of the things that we've always gone through in a sport that we're supposed to love and support.
Robbie, you have been heard. Thank you very much. Please join us again. Gabe, moving on, let's take a look at this Friday night on Spike TV. In Ontario from the Citizens Business Bank Arena, Andre Berto takes on Jose Cito Lopez, and Sean Porter returns from his loss to Kell Brook by taking on veteran Robert Garcia. Gabe, I want to plant my flag right now. I don't know if it's an upset special, but I like Jose Cito Lopez over Andre Berto. I'm hearing some interesting things that, quite frankly, I don't think are good things for Berto. And I think Jose Cito had a really nice camp up there in Big Bear. Give me the Riverside Rocky.
Waiter, send two of those.
Ooh,
I think
okay.
It is a bit of an upset special. Yeah, I haven't heard good things either about Berto. And so I don't know if it's I mean, you know, people do this for recreational reasons only. You know, plus 450,
yeah.
I think, Jose Cito Lopez, I would
what?
Say is a very good value.
Ooh.
You know, that's pretty – I actually saw a plus 500 one on one site.
Gabe, hold on. Let me just take a five-minute break here. I'm going to call my bookie, okay?
So, yeah, I was kind of like doing that this weekend when I heard the news. I just think things are – you know, these are two guys – that are kind of at the end of the road. I mean, I don't like to say that about fighters, but they're not, you know, they're on the other side of the hill. They're not, you know, approaching the top of it or, you know, they're but they're not rolling. We'll see in the fight. But you look at the matchup, but it's almost like Berto, Jesus, Soto Carras. But I think Josito Lopez is a much more technically sound version of Soto Carras. He's not a power puncher, but he hits strong, and he hits with good technique. Is he durable? Is he going to be able to take the early onslaught of Berto, who I think is going to probably go out and go for broke a bit and be very aggressive early on? If he can do that and just stick to boxing fundamentals and move the way he did with Victor Ortiz and just kind of stick at angles, I really like Josito Lopez's chances in this fight.
I really hope Lopez goes out there for his sake and tries to mug Berto much the same way that the Ghost did back in the same venue about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Gabe, Porter Garcia, I like Porter. Garcia, when it comes to a certain level, there seems to be a mental block and he kind of freezes. Give me Showtime Porter here.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever really a question of the win. I mean, no disrespect to Roberto Garcia, but I think that's why he's being matched with Porter, who's coming off that loss against Kell Brook, where he just didn't adjust. He didn't do the things he needed to do. He looked, frankly, a little bit overtrained, in my opinion. The focus was too wide, and I think they needed to tighten it. It seems like he stayed in more than just one gym or kept it down for this camp. And I think the question here really is not whether Porter's going to win, but how he wins. I think it's incumbent on him not to just go rounds and kind of go to a mauling decision, but to really be spectacular in doing it.
Gabe, what do you make of Miguel Cotto signing with Roc Nation? When I heard it was a 3-fight, $50 million guarantee, plus interest outside of boxing, like concerts and a clothing line. Listen, I know he pledges his allegiance to Todd DeBuff, but the bottom line is they didn't sign a contract. And one of the axioms that I live by in this sport, handshake agreements, Gabe, are not worth the paper they're not signed on. And 3 fights, $50 million. I can't blame Cotto for signing that type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, he's on the other side of the hill, and he's kind of a mini franchise. So, what is he going to do? Not do the best thing for himself. I mean, if they're willing to spend the money to be in the game, and they think they have a plan to help him, be a concert promoter and expand into all these other things. I mean, it's hard to, if anybody else says that to you, I'd say, okay, you're a little bit crazy. You're like, even 50 Cent. It was like, well, I know you've kind of branched out at things, but it's Jay-Z, and I think he does bring a certain cachet. I think the company has done well, from what I understand, with the other athletes and other sports that they have. So I think Miguel Cotto's taking a shot. I don't know. It's always kind of scary to be the first guy to really step out. I mean, he's there with Andre Ward. But I think Cotto has – God, I don't want to see
Gabe,
him Cornelius Bundridge, but he has options.
Here's the issue, though. 3 fights, $50 million. Now, I'm the rare Asian that didn't do very good on my SAT, but that's right around $17 million a fight. Okay, in today's business, not even Al Heyman is paying his guy $17 million. In fact, the only guys making that type of money are Pacquiao and Mayweather and maybe Klitschko out in Europe. First of all, if those numbers are true, and let's believe them, that rules out any HBO fight. That means he's got to be pay-per-view with that guarantee. So you're really going to go, let's say it's K9 Bundridge, and that's going to be pay-per-view? Good luck with that. And I don't know what that does for his options or where and when he can actually fight. And I've heard with the parameters of the deal with Andre Ward that Roc Nation signed him to, do you know of a fight that's coming up soon? Because sometimes the deal is great for the fighters, but if the network doesn't comply, now you have an issue. And as we speak, Andre Ward, I don't think anything's really even set in pencil or set in stone for his next assignment. Gabe, Zhao Xueming, I'm not ruling wrong. This had to be one of the worst title fights of all time. In fact, there was no chance of anyone getting hurt during these 12 rounds because, quite frankly, they weren't really hitting each other a lot.
It's just, the ruin wrong. He was just all wrong. The fight was all wrong. that guy's got the greatest name. Like, he should just call himself, I'm not the one. It was really hunt and peck, but he's got, apparently the longest reach in the division, and he used it, and he knows just kind of be funky at different angles and just kind of keep distance, and he's happy to do it. And, Zhao, where's the jab? Where's the activity? I think that for him, the jab or the double jab is the key that's going to unlock his combinations. And he just wouldn't let it go. It was very frustrating to watch. And a lot of footwork, a lot of feigning, you know, showing all kinds of nice technique with everything except punching. It was an inexplicable performance. Boy, horrible fights. Just a horrible fight.
Yeah, and Gabe, even Khitrov, I thought he got the perfect developmental fight, because if they're moving him quickly and he doesn't even have 10 fights and they're already talking about fighting for titles within a year, I thought Melendez really gave him some quality work on Friday night fights.
I thought it was just a solid outing, you know, and just that card, man, that was another thing, just kind of tying into the PBC. It was some brutal mismatches on that card. It just felt like you know, complete setups, and you know, they were having just such a string of knockouts. And I was, you know, kind of trying to put the PBC and all that into context, and saying, but is, you know, a series like this good for boxing, where you're just watching guys that look like they don't even belong in the ring?
Gabe, we have to differentiate, though. Remember, this is not a time buy. This happened to be a Heyman date with one of his promoters, I believe Leon Margulies was the glorified site coordinator for this fight. But when this starts up in June, when there's a Heyman time buys, in all fairness, I expect a much higher quality of card. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
All right. In the 707, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up? It's Carl.
Carl, what's going on?
What's
what can
up,
we do
Carl?
For you?
Hey, man, overall with the PBC, you know, I thought it was cool. You know what I mean? There's some things here and there, man. I ain't going to poke holes at them right now because it was, you know, the first time out. But, you know, with that ring entrance, it seemed like the only thing missing was Bob Barker, because that shit felt like The Price is Right, man. It felt like a dating show, man. You didn't feel that? That didn't feel like The Price is Right. Come on down.
You know what I noticed? When Robert Guerrero came into the ring, John Molina was the first guy to come through the ramp. He had this strange look like, this just feels funny. Why is there nobody around me? Where's Joe? Where's my father? Where's the guys that are hyping me up? Where are the guys rubbing my shoulder? And he almost took like this wrong turn. It just felt awkward. I've been at, Gabe, we've been at big fights, and I know it's not the fight, but the actual ring entrances themselves can be a lot of drama and really be entertaining.
Yeah, it's part of the whole thing, man. I mean, I'll never forget somebody, you know, our good friend Z had an extra seat right there, like a great spot, like third row for Martinez versus Williams 2. And I moved over into it. So I was right there for the ring entrances as they come in. Williams came in first, Martinez came in second. And it was just like, I'll never forget being that close, feeling that energy. All of them surrounded, like Martinez looked like a gangster, black and red coming up. It was awesome. You take that away. Like you said, it's sort of like doing open scoring. It takes away that big moment that makes boxing so great, of the drama of the decision. This guy didn't even know how to say, you know, and still or and new or whatever. You know, it was all just kind of funky. It was like a bunch of people that had never done boxing doing boxing, getting cast in boxing roles. It's really weird.
Carl, anything else?
Yeah, man. You know, I thought, like, with that Morris fight, man, the placement of that was funky, man. That seemed like that should have been at the beginning and not the end. It seemed like even if this fight was cool, people were still going to walk out and shit, man. It just didn't seem right, man.
Well, Carl, what was funny about that, Gabe, is that I heard some outlets announce this is a triple header with Abner Morris, but even to the day of the fight, people still didn't know. Did they meet at the beginning of the card or at the end of it, and was it going to be on NBC or NBC Sports Net? I found that whole situation confusing.
Disrespectful.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of disorganized. But I guess that, you know, also, you know, if John Molina goes out and it's more aggressive or Adrian Broner has more talent, you know, then maybe we get Morris on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Carl,
no,
we got to get running, okay?
All right.
If you want to call, we're here for another 21 minutes. Gabe, who's next?
805, you're live on the next round. 805.
Hey guys, what's up? It's me, Nacho.
Nacho, what's going
what's
on?
What's up, Nacho?
Nothing much. As far as the PVC goes, I thought it was okay. The biggest problem I had, though, was Marv Albert going overboard with the hyperbole on the Thurman Guerrero fight, trying to make it sound like it was a fight of the year candidate. That was
Nacho, if that is actually a candidate, in fact, if that even makes the top 10, we are in for one of the boringest nondescript years in the history of boxing. I'll just tell you that right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and also, I was wondering, did you guys get to see Zolani Tete win this weekend?
Nacho, my DVD copy is on its way. I did not get to see that, truthfully.
Oh, okay.
Which one?
Zolani Tete against Paul Butler in England?
No, you know, I haven't seen that one. I didn't.
Oh, so okay. He looked really good.
That's a talented
really
guy.
Good.
Before
yeah.
he got tripped up a couple of times, he was supposed to be the next great force from Africa, and it looks like he might be fulfilling that potential.
Yeah, he looked really good, and just the way he finished it was awesome. So I think he's going to be a threat. Yeah, and also, too, I'm a little surprised nobody's brought it up, but did you guys watch the Glenn Tapia fight at all?
Yeah, I mean, let's face
yeah.
it. If you're a prospect, you're supposed to do that to Daniel Dawson. But, Gabe, Nacho, what does this say about the current state of one Austin Trout?
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm.
That doesn't say much if you
yeah.
get knocked down by that guy.
Yeah, twice.
You know, as soon as Tapia just turned it up, it was like the first two rounds, he was like, all right, the plan is to survey the land, maybe taste the guy's power, just see what's up. And, like, the second round, you're going to want to be aggressive. Don't. It was like that was like a test. And then they just let him off the leash. And when he did, Dawson just folded like a chair. Like, it was kind of sad to watch. I mean, he trained it.
Yeah,
he just, I thought it was.
As soon as he started hitting him, he just, like, went into a shell. It was
yeah,
crazy. I'd never
yeah.
seen that before. So,
yeah.
yeah
Nacho,
oh well.
We got to get running, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot.
I got you know a sign of being shell shocked a little bit, you know, and I remember it was a few fights back. I think Dawson was on had been on Friday Night Fights. He was fighting out of Fortune for one fight, and he just kind of folded up like that after he went a little bit longer. And I just when it gets shorter and shorter like that, that's when you need to really take a look at a guy and make sure that he's okay. In the 3-1-0, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, this is Mario from City of Downey. How are you guys?
Mario, what's
hey,
going
what's
on?
Up, man?
What can we do for you?
Not much. Just zoomed in maybe about 20 minutes ago, so I'm not sure what you guys talked about so much. I'm assuming PBC. Just wanted to give a quick point on it, good and bad. One, I kind of like the entrance, the ramp. I kind of dig the way they just focus on the fighter, take away a little bit of the nonsense. Sometimes ring walks can be kind of cool, but sometimes they get kind of corny. So I thought that was pretty cool. The announcing team, in my view, was pretty horrible. Marv Albert was not on point. I don't even know why they had him. Sugar Ray Leonard looked like he wanted to come out and say what he really felt, but almost like someone put a muzzle on him. So the announcing crew I didn't really care for. Molina, Broner stunk out the joint. Thurman I was impressed with. I thought he looked good. Even after he got knocked in the head and had that huge golf ball in there. He found a different way to win. He almost had him out. My opinion, I think he ran out of gas a little bit towards the end because he was trying too hard to knock him out. But you got to give credit to Robert Guerrero also for getting back up and then fighting even harder. But otherwise than that, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was great to see it live on TV. I was a little confused, though, about the Abner Morris fight also. I thought it was going to be right on afterwards, and I found out that I had to tune in to another channel, so I ended up tuning in a little late. But I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on it?
Well, our thoughts, it's a work in progress and it needs to evolve, and I think they're trying to fix things that were never broken. I like a good ring announcer. I like the ring card girls. I don't mind the entourages and the rappers coming into the ring. To me, I love the unfiltered nature of the sport of boxing. I like the flag wavers. And in this current system, every fighter is going to walk into symphony music. There's something very cookie-cutter about that I don't like.
I mean,
that's
you know,
true, I mean,
Tommy Morrison coming out to Nazareth's Hair of the Dog, you know. Like I was watching this movie that's going to be coming out, like to kind of review it, called Champs, and they talk about, you know, Tyson and Holyfield and Hopkins, and the whole segment of Tyson where they have him like knocking all these guys out, and it's all to Welcome to the Terror Dome. Like, where is that, man? That's going to get people excited about boxing, not Hans Zimmer.
Right. I remember when Trinidad, in his heyday at the Madison Square Garden, when he would come in to some Puerto Rican beats, that place went nuts, and you didn't need all the pyrotechnics or the lasers or the lighting. It was about an engaged audience with the fighter who truly was a star that understood the environment. And I'll never forget just the electricity of that William Joppy fight back in 2001. Listen, we got to get running, okay? Thanks for joining us. Gabe, we have 15 minutes. Let's try to roll through some of these calls.
All right. Also, you know, I don't know if you got a chance to check out, speaking of that Top Rank card, Ik Yang, dude. What are your thoughts on Ik Yang? I'm really liking watching this guy fight.
Okay, Ik Yang is a guy that when I actually did a show in Macau about 2 years ago, before Top Rank actually made their foray into that territory, he was the one guy I said, that guy can fight. I think he has much more upside and natural professional talent than Zhao Xiuming, and I think if Ik Yang can stay disciplined, that's a young man that I see at wild card often, I think he has a chance. I do think he has ability, Gabe.
He's a showman, too. I love what they said about him after the fight. Like, you know, he's going to go far because he's crazy and he can punch. And he's in there and he knows that he's entertaining as well as fighting. And, you know, at the end of the – I think it was like the fourth round, he got banged and cut, really nasty cut, like split almost between the eyes, a little off center, and pretty thick blood. It was going through his eyes, but he stepped up his game and subdued his opponent and got dude out of there. It was really like I was very impressed. I mean, he was supposed to get that guy out of there, but the way he did it was really fun to watch. That's a guy came out of the weekend going, all right, that guy's on the list. In the 347, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? Mike from Queens.
Mike, what's going on?
Hey,
talk to us.
I was watching some interviews on YouTube, and I saw Paulie Malignaggi say something that I think might have been the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Again?
And I'm not an anti-Paulie guy. I honestly not. I'm not a guy who rips him on Twitter or anything like a lot of people do. But he said something about Pacquiao could not hold his own against the top five welterweights in the world. And then I'm thinking, didn't this guy just beat Bradley about a year ago? And is Bradley not a top five welterweight?
Not only that, didn't he just get beat up by one of Pacquiao's sparring partners that was, at that point, I guess could be considered a top five welterweight? There's something about Manny, and I'm being Captain Obvious here, that Paulie doesn't like.
It's just like discrediting him. I get it. You don't like him, but I mean, Timothy Bradley's a real fighter. You know what I mean? He's accomplished a lot in this game. You know what I mean? If he never threw a punch again, he'd have nothing to be said about. And I think he's definitely a top five welterweight. And for a guy who's got such a big voice in the sport, why to just discredit that? I think it's kind of shitty.
No arguments here, Gabe.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Is it because he's Asian? Is it, you know, and he's kind of small? I mean, you look at Pacquiao. The first time I ever saw him live, like in the wild card, working out, I just remember it was, you know, I was looking at his legs. I mean, like, well, there's the power, and you could see it. I mean, it's just some guys are physical freaks. Some guys bring it more than others, and I just don't understand where Paulie's coming from. And is it experience? Is it knowledge? But it's all these veiled things that he says. I saw an interview that the headline was like, "What angles?" He was like, it was Paulie basically saying Pacquiao doesn't come in angles. Like, what is it about Pacquiao that drives this guy crazy?
Mike, anything else?
Yeah, Steve, what's up with Al Haymon and being obsessed with the MGM brand? Like, that venue brought nothing to television. You know what
well,
I mean?
Let me just tell you one of the facets of the PBC that's going to be troublesome, I believe. With all the bells and whistles, the video scoreboards, the video boards, the entrance ramps, and all the equipment, they can't go into small rooms. So they're going to need big venues. And I think they gave away at least half the tickets on Saturday night. And the MGM Grand, listen, I've been told that group, Haymon, Schaefer, Mayweather, they've been working on trying to get exclusivity there for years to basically lock out other promoters, namely Bob Arum, and who spoke out about it last year about some of the things that went on. But the MGM Grand wants to have events, and I believe you'll see them there again. I want to see, Mike, and I'm sure you might be going, I want to see how well they sell on April 11th, because I think that's a very good card they have at the Barclays Center.
Yeah, I agree. And also the way PVC has been promoting it, like, I don't know if you guys listen to Dan Patrick, but they actually had Al Michaels on to kind of promote the show. And listen, I'm an Al Michaels fan. I watch him every Sunday night on football, but why the hell would Al Michaels promote the show and not have a guy like Keith Thurman? I mean, Keith Thurman isn't Adrian Broner. When
you know why, though, Mike? Because Dan Patrick knows who the hell Al Michaels is. He probably has no clue who Keith Thurman is.
Yeah,
that's the reality.
That's true.
And then probably,
you see
you know, what Dan Patrick has is that traditional sports fan. He's got the football guys, the basketball guys, and those guys have kids that they maybe have probably not passed boxing on to, but they may have had fathers that tried to, but then it went to cable and you just kind of lose track. They're trying to pull that, you know, 20% or 30% of those guys back over to boxing. That's why. And Al, those voices, it's reminiscent of your childhood, and he's probably great on the radio talking about it. I didn't hear it, but I imagine he was.
Yeah, listen.
He was talking about the history of boxing and stuff, so yeah.
Mike, we got to get running, okay? We just have a few minutes left.
No problem, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you very much, Gabe.
All right,
man,
you too. 202, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Matt from D.C.
Matt, what's going on? Talk to us.
Not much, man. I'll give you my thoughts real quick on the PBC. I was totally disappointed. I thought, I agree with you, Molina is totally gun-shy, and Adrian Broner had a guy in front of him who didn't want to do anything, and Broner wasn't willing to push the issue. And then with Thurman, the one thing that I just cannot forgive him for, and maybe it's because he's being sold as this big next big puncher at welterweight, was the way he ran from a former featherweight in the 11th round. I mean, would Tommy Hearns, would Lloyd Hunnigan or
Brown?
Would Simon, exactly, yeah. Would Simon Brown have run from Robert Guerrero? Like, this was Thurman's, I thought it was a perfect moment for Thurman to shine and just running like that in the 11th. And from what I hear, more people tuned in to the show in the last half hour of the fight. They missed the early parts where Thurman was looking better in the fight, and they saw the parts where he was struggling and running from a former featherweight. I'm not sure that's all that good for him. Those are my thoughts on that, but I did want to get your thoughts on two things since they showed Deontay Wilder, and you guys mentioned Adonis Stevenson. Who is Al Haymon gonna get for those two guys to fight?
Well, Al Haymon has signed some heavyweights, okay? They're not great heavyweights, but they're heavyweights, and they could package him as the heavyweight champion. And as it relates to Adonis Stevenson, listen, they have the Durrells, and they have a guy by the name of Julio Cesar Chavez, and if Andres Fonfaro wins, they could do that fight again. Trust me, Al Haymon, there's a reason why, Gabe, he's now close to 200 fighters. You need a opponent.
Edwin Rodriguez is in the mix there, too.
Yeah, just on Chavez, though, do you think they're going to feed him to Adonis Stevenson? Because, if Chavez wasn't going to fight Gennady Golovkin, why is he going to take Stevenson?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would think that you would see Rodriguez versus Chavez Jr. if he gets past Fonfara. I think that would be an interesting fight style wise, you know, and then see where things lie after that.
Yeah. Listen, we got to get running. Okay, we just got a few minutes. Thank you for the call, Gabe. Right, we have 7 minutes. Who's next?
724. You're live on the next round.
I'm just listening in, guys.
Okay, thank you very much. Gabe, who's next?
219, you're live on the next round. 219.
Ooh, another knockdown.
718, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up? It's Alex and Queens. Hey, listen, on the PBC, they didn't do themselves a favor by having a 20-foot ring. I mean, when you have these shows on national TV, public is going to want to see some action.
Think the standard ring in Vegas, from what I'm told, for most televised shows, whether it's HBO, Showtime, or pay-per-view, I sure it is 20 by 20, though. So I don't know if that ring size was particularly unusual.
Okay. Yeah, you know, that's standard, as I certainly understand. And going forward to April 11th, it's going to be really interesting to see a non-casino fight that's going to be in a local environment with local fighters that have local followings. I mean, if you look back in the day, I mean, you saw Tommy Hearns fight the Joe Louis Arena. It was on national TV. You saw Sugar Ray at the Capital Center. To see that environment, plus you have in the middleweight fight, you have two guys that are offensive fighters that should be a good action fight. So when you have that local flavor and you have that loud crowd noise and you have that non-antiseptic casino feel like we did last Saturday, I think that the excitement alone could be a good thing for the PBC.
Right, and Gabe, the Barclays Center is now a veteran to boxing. There should be some sort of built-in constituency by now, you would think.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's definitely, you know, a marketing apparatus. But it's, you know, who knows? I mean, it was all going through Golden Boy before. Now it's going to be, you know, Heyman Productions. I mean, he's an ex-concert promoter, and they've gone through there. So it depends on the notes they've taken, the contacts they've made. It seems strange. I mean, MGM Grand is home to so many great fights over the years and so many great atmospheres. And yet the way they set it up, it felt more like the Staples Center, which I always thought was kind of a weird cavernous kind of feel, more than the MGM Grand, didn't it? I mean, even on the Friday show, it seemed really like just echoey or something.
Yeah, well, the Friday show wasn't helped by the fact that there were about 75 people that were actually there. Alex, we got to get running. Here's a question from Jova R. So how well does Junior, Chavez Jr. versus Von Forrest sell? Should we buy now or wait a few weeks? Jova, you could literally wait till the day of the fight, and if you go and just walk around there, you're going to get good tickets at a slash price. The last time Chavez fought in that venue, it was his first fight against Brian Vera, and there was about 3,000 people. I think the bloom is off the rose, even with the Mexicans in California, as it relates to JC Superstar Jr. Gabe, let's take one more call.
I love the Twitter screen grab in your column on UCN Live today.
get your tickets while we have them.
Yeah, and the people like asking for a ticket, and they're like, hey, you know, DM us. You just won 5 tickets. No, they didn't. They just asked on Twitter if there was tickets still available. And there was, and you gave them to them. You didn't win anything. You just asked for it. 219, you're live on the next round. 219. All right, you're gone. 714, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up?
Question. Anything on Marquez? Juan Manuel Marquez, when is he returning back?
You know, Marquez's body seems to be breaking down. I know there's a reported knee injury. As of right now, I don't think there's anything definitive. I know he wants to win a title at 147 to put a cherry on top of the career, but if you go by some of the discussions people are having with either Fernando Beltran or Bob Arum, there seems to be nothing on the table, to be quite honest with you.
Wow. And then, you know what, I know you guys touched and cover some of this earlier, too, when it comes out to the PBC about, like, the ring walks, the stage. But when people go to a live boxing event, I mean, that's one of the things that they kind of look forward to, you know. And this thing is just like it takes the whole thing off. It was, like, weird in a sense, and we'll see how people just adjust to it. But
no, there's
know,
no doubt about it. The ring walks are a facet of the show. Listen, we got to get running. We have 2 minutes to go. Here's a tweet from Alex P. Did your feed of PBC on NBC have gaps in sound? Assume that was production booth guarding against F-bombs. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Gabe, one note I want to mention here before we go. Rest in peace to Sam Simon, who succumbed to a 3-year battle with colon cancer, passed away today at the age of 59. Gabe, I can just say one thing. I know he's best known for producing and co-creating The Simpsons. But to me, he will always be the manager of Lehman Brewster, one of the last American heavyweight champions who I think I was blessed to cross paths with, because he made things fun. And I'll say this, for all his money and how rich he was actually a better guy, Gabe.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't have the pleasure to know him. But, you know, I know Lehman, but man, just rest in peace. It's sad. Too young, 59 years old. So much more to do. It's terrible.
Yeah, and he left hundreds of millions at the end of his life to charity. And I think that just speaks volumes on Mr. Sam Simon. Rest in peace. Well, that's it for this week's edition of the Next Round. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and Dave Dwenev, saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.